Hello and welcome to another episode of Mistakes Were Made with me, Alex Steger.
And me, Frank Talbot.
Now, this is our last episode in the current series of this podcast. And for it, we had a very special guest, our boss and CityWire executive chairman, Lawrence Lever.
Yeah, we didn't just get Lawrence on because it was easy to get him on the podcast. We think the perspective that he brings as a business owner, a successful business owner no less, inevitably made lots of mistakes along the way, not least questionable hires like you and I, Alex.
Yeah, I think in terms of regrets, he may regret having done this, but he's done it now and it's going out, so it's too late for that.
It's notoriously not easy to start a business, and the trials you face as a founder owner should resonate with large portions of our audience.
For those of you who, you know, aren't intimately familiar with CityWire and or Lawrence, I'll give a quick bit of background. So Lawrence trained as a solicitor. He didn't pursue that as a career. Instead, he pursued the far less lucrative route as a journalist, but he was very successful there. Worked at the Times and the Mail, but he jacked that in to start his own business. That was CityWire. He set it up in 1999. He got some early backing from Reuters, but in this interview, he talks to us quite a lot about, you know, those early days, the difficulties that one faces founding a business, some of the tough decisions that you have to make. So look, without further ado, here's our interview with Lawrence. So Lawrence, you started a business, you've been running it for over 20 years now. There must have been some big mistakes along the way.
Millions of them.
Can you give us the highlights?
Yeah. Oh my goodness, how long have you got on this podcast? So, okay, first thing is, I knew nothing about business. I'm a financial journalist, right? So what do I know about journalists? I've never built a big business. So my wife was working for me at the time. That was not a mistake. In fact, we've still got some contracts that she introduced. And there was a kind of legendary, in those days, there was a legendary venture capital investor called Herman Hauser. And I said to my wife, look, can we get Herman Hauser? Can we get his advice? Because he's, you know, maybe he can help us. So my wife actually, because she's not scared of anyone, she got Herman Hauser on the phone. And he said, look, he's going away to America or wherever it was for ages. But if we came around now, he's got an hour with us. So like practically the entire company rushed out of our offices in Bloomsbury over to Herman Hauser. And we said to him, Herman, please help us. We got three ideas. We got CityWire, a news service, news to make investors money. We got MrsCohen.com. It's a kind of more broad personal finance thing. And we've got SmallerCo.com, which was an idea of promoting listed companies that were small, which didn't get publicity. These are ideas. Herman, what should we do? And Herman said, listen, in my experience, I see lots of people like you who come and go, we've got this idea, we've got that idea, we've got the other idea. And the ones that succeed are focused on just one of their ideas and they go for it. And it's the thing that creates the most buzz. So we go, Herman, tell us which one we should focus on. And he said, CityWire. And boy, was that good advice.
So what did you do?
But, this program's about mistakes. So I've got to be honest with you and say, we went back and said, Herman says CityWire, come on everyone, into CityWire. But there was a little voice in my head saying, but Mrs. Cohen is a brand. I've made TV on her. You get her on the internet. It makes sense. Maybe we can do Mrs. Cohen as well. And I remember I hired Gavin Lumsden from the Times to be the editor of MrsCohen.com. And we dropped the smaller company stuff. I wasn't really that interested in it anyway. We dropped the smaller company stuff and we went with CityWire and MrsCohen.com. And of course, that was a mistake because Mrs. Cohen, we ran for a year or two. It lost £650,000. Its only great advantage was it was a tax loss. But other than that, it was a bad decision. Nobody's fault other than mine. It just didn't work. And CityWire was the success. So Herman was right.
And so your mistake here...
I did not take his advice fully.
Yeah, so your mistake here was not listening to good advice, but also, I suppose, what did you, you know, over time, what did you learn from that?
Focus. Don't get tempted. There's so many things that look like your business, that look like, yes, you could do this. Yes, it makes sense. Oh, you've got fund manager data. Why don't you be a fund management group? Why don't you do a fund of funds? Oh, you've got fund manager data. Why don't you be a platform? You know, all of these things that kind of look analogous or adjacent to what it is you're doing, just be really, really careful, because it might look like your business, but often it really isn't. So focus on what you're doing and build that out rather than chase after things, and learn to let things go. That's what I learned.
That makes a lot of sense. And in that early, in those early years, then when you've ignored Herman's advice, you've made that mistake, and you're ploughing on with two businesses for whatever it was, a year or two, and as you say, you're sort of losing money while doing so. I think you've spoken to us about this before. Was that how difficult a time was that? Were there points then when you thought it was a mistake to start a business full stop?
No, I wouldn't say it was that really, but. Two things. There were definitely times where I just couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. We were losing money, £200,000 a month. We got 3 million in the bank. That's 15 months worth of money. And the money is going down every single month. Okay. So there were times where I couldn't quite see what the light is at the end of the tunnel. And I remember at one point we tried to sort of sell ourselves back to Reuters quickly to sort of kind of get rid of the problem. But thankfully, they didn't accept our crazy valuation, et cetera, et cetera. So there were times where we thought our only way out was to sell. Okay, so there was that. But basically, you know, this is business. I mean, I never want to start another company. I was an old person. I was 42 when I started. I wasn't a youngster. Okay, I'm 63 now. They talk about people as serial entrepreneurs. Not me. Never want to do it again. CityWire has been great and it's been successful, but I'm not going through that again, because the first 4 years were really, really tough.
So would you do it again?
Definitely
knowing what
not.
You know. Definitely no, not. You'd no, never start a business
I
again.
I might become a sort of old fogey on other people's boards, giving them advice. But
That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, knowing what you know today, would you start CityWire again? Would you go back to the view?
Go back to Time Machine. It's 1999.
I would. I would, because only because I didn't want to be an investigative journalist anymore. I wanted to build something. I wanted to build something. And I wanted to test myself, and I feel like CityWire has been a massive test for me, because I had no experience. I've had to make all the mistakes in the game, and you know, and get through, and just accept the knocks. I'll give you a funny example, but I realized after a period of time, I realized that my first reaction to everything was wrong. It was the wrong reaction. Often it came from emotion. Somebody had done something. I got angry. I gave an emotional response. So I learned, hold on, you know, hold on to that response. Don't express it. And then hopefully your second, you know, response to it is the correct one. So you had to kind of really dig down into yourself and say, just hold back, because I was like reacting wrongly.
Do you know, I think, I don't know about you, Frank, I think that's something I've learned over time.
Yeah, I think that's something I've learned from Lawrence, actually. Yeah,
I taught you something. Yeah. Frank, well, my done. Boy, I taught him everything he knows.
Please.
What? And look how he's doing now. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think I've definitely learned that over time. Sort of, yeah, initial response is, oh, God,
yeah.
No. And then
you've got to hold your tongue.
What about mistakes? We talked a lot about mistakes at the start, you know, and the difficulties there. Once you're up and running, have there ever been times when perhaps you've made an error, I don't know, in a particular deal or thing, you know?
Yeah. I trusted somebody and they stitched me up. So I'll tell you what happened. We were, Barclays wanted someone to build a platform for them and to provide content. And they kind of let it be known that if we tied up with, if CityWire tied up with Financial Express and bid for the contract, we could win it. So or we'd have a good chance. So we tied up with Financial Express, we partnered and we bid for the contract and we won. And then Barclays said, that's great. You've won, etc. But we don't want a contract with two companies. So I said, fine, Financial Express do a contract with you and you subcontract with us. That's great. We're all going well. We get paid, etc., etc. And then I can't remember how many years later, but suddenly Financial Express served notice on us. I said, what are you doing? You're serving notice on us? You? We're partners. And he goes, no, contract. Da, 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 da. So they served notice on it. And like, you know, we were terminated. And like next thing we know, they've launched their own fund manager data, which we were providing to Barclays. Now they're providing their own to Barclays. So we were stitched up. I mean, they paid us about 30 grand compensation in the end. But that was an example. I just trusted somebody. Funnily enough, I mean, there's very few examples where I feel I was let down like that. Very few.
But I mean, by and large, you must have, you know, you must have to trust people more than you distrust them, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah,
more often than not,
otherwise you go. Otherwise, you go around. Look, if you operate on the basis that someone's going to rip you off, you're spending all your time thinking about the downside, and that's one of the reasons I gave up law. Law was all about, you know, protecting your ass, drafting the document. The document has to be 60 pages long because of all the terrible things that could go wrong. You had to draft them and cover them. But you know, I mean, that's just. I mean, what kind of It really was bad for me as a personality. It would make me, like, really cautious. So, you know, I didn't want to be like that. I don't know if I've answered that question. What was the question? I've forgotten it already. I sort of rambled.
It was
on.
Just more about, you know, most times when you trust people, that isn't a mistake.
Yeah,
you know?
Look, it's better. I prefer to be trust. I prefer to trust and be let down than never trust and never be let down, because I always think everyone's a villain. It's a much healthier psychological... I mean, I had to teach myself to be like this. Look, I come from a family of lawyers. My dad was a lawyer. All his brothers were lawyers. His sister were lawyers. My two older brothers were lawyers. I was surrounded by lawyers.
I've got a question for you. So CityWire is always, you know, producing new ideas, new products. Have there been times you've been particularly wed to an idea that you knew was wrong and you kept pushing?
Well, we talked about Mrs. Cohen. That was one.
But more subsequently, I mean, it's been a long time.
You know, we did a book called Recipes for Wealth, which was a hard print.
Read it.
It was a hard print book.
Don't lie, Frank. Seen it and reading it are two different things. Come on.
Based on our data. And we promoted it through the Mail on Sunday, and it sold a lot of copies. And we thought, oh, well, you know, let's update it and do it again. And it bombed. And I think, you know, we were ostensibly partners with the Mail on Sunday, but we said, don't worry, we'll cover the loss. Maybe it was £20,000-£30,000. I remember Jeff Prestridge, the editor, saying, look, this is reader fatigue. You know, you've done it once and you think, all right, you've done it once, it'll work again. But it didn't. I mean, you know, it's supposed to be, you learn. I think the thing is, if your mistakes aren't too costly, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Are there, I mean, we haven't done anything on this before. As a journalist, were there ever any big mistakes that you made?
Oh,
were
God,
there,
I got
ever...
sued.
Stories, yeah,
yeah. When I was at the Mail on Sunday, I got sued quite a lot.
when we say quite a lot, I mean, how frequently are we talking?
I don't know. I mean, Robert Maxwell had three writs against me when he died. Robert Maxwell was a big financier, jumped off a boat, fell off a boat, not quite sure.
Yeah, his daughter's in the news for some reason recently.
He sued me three times. Look, you do get things wrong, you know. That's just the reality of things. Sometimes you make mistakes and... you know, hopefully not too often.
And maybe
I always had this thing with journalism that I sometimes what I do is if I knew something, I would kind of, that was bad, I would kind of like not tell the full story because I'd hold something back so that people would sort of think, oh, well, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. You know, I also, the other reason why I was glad to stop it, I got fed up of always bashing people on the head, you know, and being this. Sounds glamorous, investigative journalist, but it's fine when it's a Barlow Clouse, when it's little old ladies have been ripped off and you're exposing the way the government made mistakes over it and in the end the government compensate the little old ladies. That's fine. But if it's just someone who's made a business error, why do I want to be the journalist with this horrible sneering tone saying, nah, you got it wrong? I hated that stuff.
Do you think that there are mistakes that you see in, maybe it's CityWire, maybe it's other people, that I suppose the media makes when covering either the asset management industry or investment, do you sort of, are there?
Well, the things that frustrate me are more stylistic things, like starting an article with lots of background, not kind of understanding what the nub of the story is, realizing that the first sentence is really important and that you haven't got a God-given right for anybody to read your content. So you have to make it really good. So that first sentence, that first paragraph, you have to cajole people. And sometimes what I see is people don't make the best. They've got great content, but they just don't make the most of it.
It's a helpful little best practice session.
I'm not talking, it's kind of like your copy, Alex. And of course, Frank's as well.
Hardly.
I'm always having to rewrite Frank's articles.
Yeah, let's move on from this. I meant more sort of, you know, perhaps the tone or, you know, some people criticise the breathlessness of financial media.
Short-termism. Yeah, I can't stand all that. Sometimes it's a bit too breathless to push people up and too breathless to knock them down. Yeah, like there's things I don't like when they talk about a fund manager leaves the firm. You know, one thing I don't like at Citywire, and I've issued an edict, if you can call it that, don't say the manager's been axed. I mean, how would you like it? You've lost your job and someone says you've been axed. What a horrible way to describe it. You know, so I think we need to be accurate, we need to be fair, but also we need to have some degree of sensitivity.
Yeah, these are human beings after
all. You can make the point without being horrible.
In your time, you know, covering investment from, you know, your time at the Times and covering scandals and things to starting Citywire and interviewing managers, etc., are there any sort of big mistakes that you've noticed that sort of come up a lot, sort of, you know, almost sort of every few every generation or two, you kind of see the same, I don't know, whether it's hubris in a portfolio manager, whether it's you know, blind spots that certain people have? Are there kind of some
yeah, I mean, there are some there are patterns that are common. So, for example, you know, there's this expression that the cover-up is usually worse than the crime, or that people get caught by the cover-up rather than the crime. And I've seen that a lot, that you know, people do something wrong, but they don't get caught for doing that, the thing wrong. They get caught from covering it up. The other thing I've learned is that so many things go wrong because people don't communicate properly. You know, it's like the information is known somewhere in the system, but what Department A doesn't talk to Department B. And that often leads to things going really badly wrong. And then the other thing is, and I guess it's relevant to Bitcoin, etc., because, you know, I used to cover a lot of sort of get-rich-quick schemes or you know, just kind of things that offered huge amounts of return, which were basically bogus. And I guess, you know, and it's increasingly an unpopular view, but there's just something about cryptocurrency that just reminds me of all those times before where people have been raving about a new investment or a new opportunity. And even some people who you would think are, you know, pretty well established and knowledgeable, start to rave about it. I'll give you a funny example. I won't name the fund manager, but years ago, back in 2000, there was a company called Infobank. And I think it was going to be the latest online banking. And this was long before online banking was established. And I remember talking to a really well-known fund manager who often was very, very analytical. And I said to him, you know, people are saying this company whose shares have gone from like 40p to £4, you know, people were saying, you know, it could go to £50. And aren't they mad? And expecting him to say, yeah, it's crazy. And he said, no, I don't think that's beyond bounds of possibility. And of course, it went bust. So I'm saying that, you know, I do see there are these manias and very sensible people grab hold of them. And in the end, they explode. And I still feel that is the what's going to happen vis-a-vis cryptocurrency, but a lot of people disagree. You know, you get carried away. It's the new paradigm. When I started Citywire, people were saying it's not about revenues, it's not about profits, it's about eyeballs. How many eyeballs have you got? How many people are looking at your website? That is the metric. Two eyeballs, one user is worth 50 quid. So if you've got a million users, you've got £50 million valuation. You know, so there are these kind of weird metrics that you see. People believe, and often, I mean, maybe it's the lawyer in me, but so often, in the end, it proves to be ephemeral.
Has there been a mistake in your 30 years in the investment industry that surprised you the most, made by someone else, not necessarily yourself? Something that really caught you off guard and you were shocked. Maybe some individual with a great reputation and it all came down. I'm not talking about Madoff here, but...
I know it's very UK-centric. I think the Neil Woodford thing. You know, I mean, when we were launching our first magazine, everybody, when we sat around the table deciding who to put on the front cover, everybody said Neil Woodford. And when you went around and talked to CEOs, and they said, tell us a fund manager that manages a lot of money that can actually really handle a lot of money and do well. Neil Woodford's name would always be mentioned. So it has been a bit of a surprise to me that he ultimately imploded. But I think, you know, and that's something else I've noticed over the years. it's always really useful to have somebody alongside you who is willing to say no, or can tell you when you're going wrong, or just is a sort of, yeah, is a kind of more senior person or a mentor or something like that. And I think Neil had that at Invesco. Bob Yerbury was one. There were others. But when he when he went out on his own, I don't think he really had that. And I think that, I think there are things that he did when he was running his own shop, which he just would have been told not to do had he been at a firm, or had he had more senior people alongside him.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So we all need somebody alongside us who is prepared to say no.
Who could call the bullshit.
Yeah, or just tell you where you're going wrong, you know. I mean, not in a horrible way, but just, we all need that. Because I think there's a danger if we all just, you know, we all need sounding boards. But I think the more important than the sounding boards, we also all need the willingness to admit where we're wrong.
So do you think that in the asset management industry that there is enough of that sort of humility and willingness to acknowledge and admit mistakes? I mean, so you do a series now, I think it's in its third, fourth, fifth year, the CEO Summit, CEO Tapes, as it was once called, where, you know, you've interviewed, I don't know, 30, 50 CEOs of major asset managers around the world. Do you think that those firms and those individuals sort of are collectively good enough at acknowledging where they go wrong and sort of fixing those things?
I mean, this is an awful generalization, but asset management is not how I imagine investment banking is. My limited contact with investment banking through financial journalism was that they weren't particularly pleasant people, often arrogant and often ready to pounce on any mistake you made to put you down. Okay, just not people you wanted to spend time with. I find incredibly few people like that in asset management. You know, I think, okay, you know, the rewards are great in asset management, but in investment banking, they can be enormous. But I find that the CEOs I've come across generally have not been difficult, awkward, arrogant people. They've been kind of quite easy to relate to.
Very diplomatic, but also I'm sure true as well, yeah.
You'll know from your own experience. I guess the other thing is, because I represent CityWire and because people think, in inverted commas, I'm either a journalist or I employ a lot of journalists, people are perhaps on their best behavior with me, and maybe, you know, when the door's closed and I'm out of the room, they may behave differently. It's hard to judge, but the ones that I've got to know over the years, I think they're decent people.
Well, there we go. That was our interview with Lawrence Lever, Executive Chairman, founder of CityWire, and sort of definitely our boss. Frank, a lot to take from that.
Yeah, a lot to take. A lot of things I wasn't aware of before we did the podcast. I think the main thing that I personally am going to take from this is I certainly would not start my own business. You know, it wasn't something I was considering beforehand.
I don't know. Yeah. I've
frightening,
thought about it
before. Frightening, because he talks about, you know, being significantly in debt and money is just wasting away. And you could be staring at failure, which lots of business owners do. It's much harder to found a business than it is beat a benchmark like we criticize fund managers for. So it's tough.
Yeah, well played. No, fair enough. I thought, no, you're right. I probably wouldn't deal with the stress and anxiety of being a business owner or having debt. Well, I don't think. I thought there were a couple of really interesting things there that, you know, even if you haven't founded a business that are sort of useful, particularly that first lesson, their sort of, you know, their meeting with Herman, their decision not to necessarily listen to all his advice, but, you know, the ultimate thing there about sort of effectively focusing what you're good at, focusing on your best idea, your core strength, and not being distracted by things that look similar, that might be adjacent, that, you know, could be an avenue for you. I think that's probably something that, you know, whether you're running a portfolio or a business, that's something that you should take on board.
Yeah, and don't fall in love with an idea as well. You know, they were clearly, they came in with these three ideas. They thought all of them had legs. Herman turns around and goes, this is the one you should do because you're passionate about it. But they also, you know, they hedged their bets, and ultimately that was a very costly move, and they were lucky to make it out of there alive, really.
Alive's a little strong. I thought that was interesting. I also thought and we both sort of admitted that we've made this mistake too, but kind of, you know, don't always go with your first instinct. Don't always sort of react to things and kind of say, hey, that's not what I wanted. Take a beat.
Like don't write an email to your boss when you're angry. In this case, Lawrence being our boss, wouldn't go down that well. So just step away, write it in 24 hours, you know, feel better about it.
Just really, really make use of that drafts folder. Just, you know,
exactly.
Please just delete it every day. I thought that was something that we could all learn from. Anything else, Frank, that you took from your time? This time with Lawrence, as opposed to all the other time that you spend with him.
Ultimately, trust people.
Trust people, yeah. Again, I think that's a little bit like the reaction thing. Sometimes it takes time to learn that, perhaps, particularly when it's your money on the line, you know, and your livelihood.
Also, take breaks when you're a business owner. You know, don't overwork yourself. Lawrence is definitely capable of overworking himself.
Speaking of taking breaks, we are going to take a break. Mistakes were made. We'll return in September. This is the last episode of the current run, and we'll come back for season two if the podcast that we put out with our boss doesn't get us cancelled. So we will see you then, or hear you then, or whatever the correct verb is. We've really enjoyed doing these interviews. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to them. And on that note, it is goodbye from me, Alex Steger.
And goodbye from me, Frank Talbot.